Welcome to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now, your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for tuning in this week. I'm Jared Serbu. This time around on DOD, an update on what the Army's up to when it comes to network modernization. That term has different meanings depending on which part of the Army you're talking about. And for most of this hour, we're going to be talking about what the Army refers to as its tactical networks. It moves information between and amongst soldiers on the battlefield. Our guest for this is Major General Dan Hughes. He is the Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, and Communications, Tactical. Hughes says he's all in with the idea of creating a single, interoperable network that looks basically the same to every DOD and coalition warfighter. Those are the visions DOD's put forward with ideas like its Joint Information Environment and the Mission Partner Network. At the same time, Hughes says the Army needs to get moving on a strategy to make its own battlefield systems more interoperable, more integrated, and more intuitive to the soldiers who will end up using them. Hughes talked with me about his vision for the Army's tactical networks earlier this month here in Washington at the Association of the U.S. Army's annual conference.
We started off with a network, and I'll just go back to what we call the digitization of the Army. So in the late 90s, early 2000s, we went in and added digital capabilities to enhance what we call the Big Five, you know, the tank, the Bradley, all of that for air-land battle. We found that if you added a network capability, even no matter how rudimentary, it increased the lethality of the system. So air-land battle was win against a larger enemy with less force. That's really what it was, conservation of force, things like that. Right now we're looking at how do we take the what commercial industry has done, which is put internet everywhere, like your smartphone in your pocket. How do we get that kind of capability down to the soldier? And little by little, you know, we haven't stood still. We've added capability. The problem is that in an environment that's austere, you don't have cell towers everywhere. You don't have that infrastructure that's there. Sometimes you don't have SATCOM that's in certain areas, so I can't just connect. So we're modernizing our network to operate anywhere in the world. It's gonna be adaptable to that environment that's there, and it's gonna give the capability of the commander to get comms and data where they need it. And really one of the keys to this is the data. So if I can get the data moved from point A to point B, then I can fight the fight. So we're going to give them, modernize the network to the point where we bring the data to whatever level the soldier wants it to be, the commander wants it to be, so we can execute the fight.
Would it be fair to say that in an ideal world you'd like to have robust connectivity wherever you are, and you are building those capabilities, but you want to be able to operate in environments where you don't have
absolutely
that,
if the enemy let us vote on everything, we would actually operate on 4G LTE networks with no security, and they wouldn't get in. It would be really cool. That's not the world we live in. So in the winning in a complex world forces us to build security into our system, take advantage of whatever commercial pieces that are out there, drive competition into everything we're buying so we can get a lower price, more innovation, and then bring that capability to the commander in a simplistic fashion. If it takes four steps, I'll tell you just one story to always tell.
Sure.
Four 16-digit passwords to get into one system, a soldier would never, ever, ever use that system, ever, ever. That's a real example. It's got to be simple. It's got to be your iPhone or your Samsung Galaxy. It's got to give that piece. We also can't have a system that takes us 19 weeks to train, because if it takes that long, just think about how many soldiers I need to get through that. Do the math on an army of 490,000. A lot of soldiers to train. I need to really make we always call it the faceplate. The front of the whatever we're using has to be easy enough for a soldier to click on, like an app. You know, my wife uses her iPhone for just about everything, from banking to staying in contact with our kids, to whatever, maybe shopping. But you have to have the ability for her not to have to go to a school to learn the app. So if you have an app, just think about it. Apple just put out the iPhone 6. I'm going to get an iPhone 6 Plus here. I finally decided that because it's big enough. It looks like my iPad. I'm good to go. And with my eyes as bad as they are, iPhone 6 Plus is where we're going to go.
Don't bend it.
I'm not going to bend. Trust me. I will break it like I broke the 4S I have in my pocket. But that'll be a while. So you never saw Apple say, when you buy this iPhone 6, come out to Cupertino for the next 8 weeks and I'll train you on it. But that's what we do right now. So I'll put a piece of equipment in there, and I'll say, okay, school, teach this thing for 8 weeks so that soldiers can use that. A great example of the simplicity is the Rifleman Radio, which I was there when we started that and named it. The Rifleman Radio, we have a four-hour block of instruction. After the first 10 minutes, the soldiers are scratching their head, yawning, because they said, just give it to us. Let me use it, and we'll ask you questions. So it changed the whole training paradigm on how that little device now that fits on every soldier's uniform that'll go down on the squad leader and the team leader, they don't want us to put that much training into it. I want to build devices in a network like that. That doesn't mean that the complexity is not in the back, but folks that have Fios in their house, Verizon Fios, they never go into the router and look at how many changes happen in a router every day. You know what? They're really happy when HBO appears on the screen and they have internet connectivity. I actually do go on the router and see how many changes, but I'm a geek. That's part of, I'm like, wow, they really changed that. There's a group of folks that sit in Ashburn, Virginia, I believe, that run that network to make sure it works. So the Army has the complexity in the background away from the user. That's what we want. We want the user to be able to fight the fight. I want the commander to be able to fight the fight with a network that's agile, that's adaptable to what he's doing, and not have to worry about it. It just works. That's what we're trying for. That's what modernization of the network really means to me.
I got it that you want simplicity and you want to build on a foundation of commercial technology, but obviously you want to maintain technological overmatch too. In this new world, the enemy has access to the same commercial technologies. How do you maintain that overmatch when you're both working from the same foundation?
So you can, in certain areas where we can invest in the network on our science and technology side of the house, we will leverage better. Say antenna technology and better gain on the antenna will help us. It's if you're sitting in an urban environment and you have a great signal of, you know, 4 bar, 5 bars, whatever it is right there. If you're in the middle of Somalia, in the middle of a village, and there's 1 bar, and we can bring 5 to our soldiers, we can bring the data to that. We can enhance the capability that's there. So you can get better. We might be able to get better throughput. We might be able to get overmatched that way. We also might be able to operate in areas in the spectrum that they can't operate in. We can also bring overhead capability to them and bigger bandwidth capability. And then there's the waveforms. What do the waveforms have? And I'll tell you, the cell phone companies have done a heck of a job because there's a profit motivation behind it. They spend billions of dollars on that technology. We just need to leverage all of that so the taxpayers get, you know, at the biggest bang for every dollar we spend.
So let's talk more about the roadmap itself. Three phases, I think, is the way that you've, mm-hmm. that you've built it out and the way that you're moving out on it.
Sure.
Let's start with phase one. What are you doing right now with Network 2.0?
So Network 2.0 is really an introduction of the Army to its own network. So if I went out to ask the 300-plus general officers we have in the Army, so what is your network? What's your network today? What's your network and mission command look like? I would get a whole bunch of different answers. Some will say, you know what, it really, really works well. Some would say, none of this stuff works as we go out there. So what I want to do is reintroduce the Army to the standardized network that we have for capability set 14 and 15. So it is here's my WinT increment 2 capability. Here's WinT increment 1B, which is our at the halt capability that we have in most of the Army right now. Better bandwidth, better capabilities, but not the simplicity that we're going to bring with what's next, which is StarNet. So I bring StarNet in and I try to get as much over the air reconfiguration as I possibly can. If I need to touch radios every time I change something, then I'm wrong from the start. Just think about a brigade combat team when I was a young lieutenant, had maybe 10 radios in it total, and we're talking hundreds of radios now. So all of a sudden I have to touch every radio if I want to change the presets on them. I can't do that. I need to go over the air. So one of the big parts of the StarNet piece is to get over the air reconfiguration and rekeying so that I don't have that. So if we go from one fight to a next fight, all I need to do is have the S6 or the G6 in that unit turn around and say, we're implementing this plan. And the plan, it cascades all the way through the network to each one of the devices. The devices go on the right frequency, right spectrum, right everything as we go forward. It got the right IP addresses and everything else. So therefore, the network would work as he walks into the plan. Again, the commander has the ability to take charge of his own network and execute it as part of the fight that he has.
And so the reasons that you would want to do that kind of reconfiguration, I guess, is, say, you're moving from one geographic area where you have access to certain parts of spectrum that you may not in another country?
That could. So let me give you an easier example of what I'm talking
sure.
about.
Sure.
So one brigade is aligned to fight against this fight, and this brigade is having next brigade next to it is having an issue. So we want to pull a unit from this brigade to this brigade. So I do what's called a unit task reorganization. So I'm going to take this company and I'm going to hook it into this brigade. Right now, I've got to go to that company, pull all of its data, touch every radio it has, touch every radio on this side, make sure all the stuff is aligned, all the data products are aligned, and then after hours of doing that, they can start the fight. I want to do that over the air in an instant. So we just say, company Alpha Company, you are now part of this unit in this brigade. Just connect next to it. And therefore, I have the ability to look across the entire spectrum and give the flexibility back to the commander. Because the commander right now hesitates to do that because he knows what the comm problem is. So I want the commander to not even think about that. If commander can align for battle, you know, walking in the door, and when they look across and use what we would call digital interior lines, you just go, I want this over here, you just change it. And he looks over at the six, who's usually beaten up anyway by that time, and they execute the fight.
If you pull that off, it seems like beyond flexibility for the commander, you also do some nice things for cost because you don't need to have legions of field service reps out there in the country.
The key is, I want to say very clearly, the field service reps that we have had have done an unbelievable, these are great Americans.
Sure.
You know, folks talk about the expense of that all the time. If we didn't have those folks, with the equipment we have right now, soldiers would not have been as successful in the fights that we have had. They have done an unbelievable job, and I want to say that very clearly up front. But what the boss talks about all the time is what we call the tooth-to-tail ratio. It costs a lot. Now, costing means I've got to bring them over, I've got to feed them, I've got to – there. And by the way, I put them in harm's way. I don't want to do that. So if I can reduce the number that we have, the better off we're going to be. And, of course, it saves the taxpayers' dollars as we go there because we have less folks in contact. I'm more worried about having – I always tell a story of if you have a Patriot unit and you have a guy in a blue T-shirt wandering around that every time the radar seems to not work, he comes out, he does something, the radar turns on. First person they're going to shoot is that guy in the blue outfit. So he's at risk. I don't want to have him at risk as well.
Major General Dan Hughes is the Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, and Communications Tactical for the U.S. Army. We're talking about the Army's Tactical Network Modernization Roadmap. A lot more coming up after a short break. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servio. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Servu. Our guest this week is Major General Dan Hughes, the Army's Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, and Communications Tactical. He's giving us an update on the Army's modernization roadmap for its battlefield networks. The blueprint works in three phases, but Hughes says the ultimate objective is a system of systems that's robust, flexible, and quick and easy to deploy.
So obviously you're in charge of the Army's tactical networks. I know there's a big effort going on right now on the garrison side to normalize networks, modernize networks. Talk about how those two things mesh, how they're coordinated.
So General Farrell, who's the G6 in the Army, and I were just talking this morning about, there's one network. So what we need to do, and this is an outgrowth of the Internet. So if you have an app on your iPhone that you tap on and you want the latest Dallas Cowboys score from yesterday as they, of course, defeated the Seattle Seahawks, you're tapping into a network and an enterprise. So that goes back to the ESPN mothership server and pulls stuff back. So if I'm a soldier on a battlefield and I need information that's available somewhere on the Internet, I'm going to have to hit the enterprise network to get it. Now, I'll keep a local copy. I'm going to continue to operate whether I have connectivity or not, but it enhances our ability to go back to the enterprise network, to pull intel data, to pull geospatial data, and to hook them together. Right now, they're two fairly separate networks. I can touch IP-wise the two of them. But if I have one seamless network, the greatest part of that is not only can I touch all that data that's available, I can get to where I need to go on the internet, but I also can secure all of this. So I can see all the way down to the individual rifleman radio if I wanted to. So think about the cyber implications of that. If I can see what's down there, I can see the applications that are there, and I can control it from somewhere, that's great. If I can also connect it, too, as second order effect here, I can train on the enterprise network and never take my boxes off of it. So if I'm executing the fight or executing a training exercise and I'm on the network and I go back to Garrison, I continue to update all my patches, I continue to keep the system going, I continue to train on it, and it's not a different set of parameters. Right. It's the same fight.
And on the sort of business IT side of things, we hear a lot lately about the joint information environment, creating an inter-service enterprise network structure. Do you think of yourself in the tactical world as playing in JIE?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. So we're looking at every standard. As a matter of fact, we're driving some of the standards. The Army's sort of unique. Well, excuse me. Army's really unique because it's the biggest player in that space. So what I do is I watch the JIE to make sure they are not doing something that would preclude us from operating. Because a soldier that cannot operate their mission command or command and control systems cannot execute the fight. So if someone at the enterprise level who has fiber optic connectivity that decides that, oh, you know, I need to check search or something like that, and that's the only way to get on the system, that young soldier that's disconnected on the battlefield has kilobits of connectivity can't do that. So we're making sure that they don't preclude tactical pieces. But we're also going to leverage everything that General Bowman's group is doing to give us the best capability possible. And what they're doing on the enterprise side of the house is really looking at the latest technology and implementing it as fast as possible. Hard for us to do on the tactical side, but we're trying to get there as fast as we can.
So we've hit on some of the shorter-term phases of the network modernization roadmap, Network 2.0 and StarNet. Talk a bit about the sort of deeper future after 2020. What are you aiming for?
So the network after next, which is really the long-term, you know, 2030, 2035 piece, it's really hard. General Perkins gave a speech this morning that talked about, you know, it's the unknown unknowns. I mean, people use that term, but this really is. Because if I go out and we look 10 years from now and I say, you know what I need? I need this kind of radio that operates in this spectrum, that operates because the enemy's going to do A, B, and C. The enemy won't do that anymore. The enemy will change based on where we go. He said this morning, it made clear sense, if the enemy is getting whacked because he presents himself as a target, they're going to stop presenting himself as a target. So we're trying to adjust that science and technology to look at what the commercial industry is doing, one, you know, through fully programmable gate arrays, FPGAs that goes in radios that we use for sensitivity. So a signal comes in and you can check things on this. And the more gates, the better, because you get, you know, it's basically another check. Zero, give me another 10,000 zero and ones and I'll be a happy guy. That technology moves very, very, very fast. But we aren't trying to look at what the next leap ahead technology is. What's out there that is the, you know, I hate to say the iPhones, Apple, way too many credits here. What's the next iPhone? What is the flat panel display of this piece? Because if you look back in the old, remember the old Star Trek TV show, Million Years, in the 60s? I mean, it only ran for a couple of years. But if you look at what they have a communicator that sits on them that looks like something little that rifleman radio could eventually be. They had flat panels and laptops. 1968. So I actually turn around and look at sci-fi movies and go, what are these guys thinking of and what can we take advantage of? Pretty interesting as you look at that. Now, from the real pure science and technology side of the house, I'm looking at antennas. I need better battery technology. We need a way to make the microprocessors much more energy efficient and much less hot. I mean, excuse me, less heat inside the system itself. And by the way, I want everything smaller and cheaper. But the smaller we get, the more adaptable I can be in our new vehicles. So think about if I can make the radio 5 pounds versus 10 pounds, that means Dave Bassett over in a vehicle PEO can use less energy, can have more room inside there, and maybe that ground combat vehicle weighs a little less because the radio is not as big. Maybe that soldier doesn't have to carry X amount of pounds, as he's already carrying 125 in a pack sometimes. You know, if that radio only weighs 5 pounds, 5 pounds off of what we have right now. So that's really things we look at. And some of this is evolutionary, but we're looking at revolutionary technology where it becomes available. And a lot of this, because we don't have the monies of the Qualcomms of the world, you know, we're looking at what they are doing, what really leans itself forward. But I'm not getting an Apple Watch. I'll just say that up.
So a lot of the things that you just mentioned, you know, better battery life, more processing mm-hmm. power in a more miniature package, more energy efficiency, those are all really high priorities, too, for commercial industry. So where are the specialty areas, you know, for 2020 and beyond that are Army unique, where the Army needs to put its money?
So think about antennas.
Okay,
so antennas is a really different beast. So the antenna we have right now, it took for on-the-move capability, I need a gimbal antenna that stays connected over a pretty nasty terrain that's connected to that satellite. So it basically corrects, builds signal strength, and that's the way it works. What if I had a flat panel that fits on the top of a vehicle that conforms to the vehicle that's an antenna, and we just lay them wherever across? That changes the whole dynamic. We're working on that. Commercial industry is working on that. What they want to do it for, though, is so you can have DirecTV in your car, I guess. Because these big antennas that fit on top of that's not going to work for most people in their cars. So the capability to do that. So let me go back to battery, though. Battery for commercial industry is a... You know, the guys in Tesla did a pretty good job with their car, with the Tesla Model S. We want to take that to the next level, though. I want to look at how the lithium ion battery right now works, and I want to take a look at basically how can I get 30% more out of that and get 30% out of it now? How do I create energy from a soldier walking? That's the stuff that PEO soldier looks at. You know, how do I not have to carry as many battery sets on here? Is solar good enough? Can we make that better? But I want it to the point where we can revolutionarily change our logistics on this. Because if I have to continue to supply batteries on a regular basis, and a guy has to carry three of them and they weigh 4 pounds each, that just doesn't cut it. Now, of course, we always have to look at safety and, you know, lithium ion and how that works.
Major General Dan Hughes is the Army's Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, and Communications, Tactical. Another quick break, and we'll return and get an update on the Army's network integration evaluations. There's one going on right now in Fort Bliss, Texas, and White Sands, New Mexico. This is On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servin. Thanks for listening to On DoD on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Our guest this hour is Major General Dan Hughes. He's the Army's Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, and Communications, Tactical. We've been talking for most of the show about PEOC-3T's roadmap for modernizing its battlefield networks. One major avenue for that modernization is the twice-a-year network integration evaluation. PEOC-3T has a major role in those exercises. Hughes also played a lead role in the NIE process during his earlier job as the Army's Director for System of Systems Integration.
So let's talk a little bit about network integration evaluation, which got a lot of attention from the media, including us, back when it was still a new idea.
Where'd you guys been?
We're still working.
We're
here to play catch up. So talk about how the process has changed over maybe the past couple cycles, how you guys are using it now, what you've learned as you've gone on.
So we've gotten smarter. Yeah. And I will tell you, from the very beginning, when I was there in the beginning, and General Williamson and I talk about this all the time because he was there as one of the precursors to it. We would take as many folks as we possibly could, bring them to Fort Bliss, and let them jump on top of a vehicle and try to work the damn problem down there, and try to work the integration in the field at Fort Bliss, and of course, as soon as we got to the field, you know, one cable would go missing, something went. So what we have right now is we set up a very rigid process on how we bring systems in. The systems go through a lab in Aberdeen. We can bring the entire network up in Aberdeen now, which is something that I had planned 3 years ago, I guess, or whatever it is, so that we can see what the issues are there in the lab before I bring them down to Bliss.
So that you're not wasting time during NIE?
So I'm not wasting soldiers' time. Right. So one of the NIEs I went through with, and General Randy Dragon is out there, and General Dragon did a great job in this, we never got the network up the entire time. It never, ever, ever came to the point where the soldiers had control of the network. We ended the NIE without the soldiers owning the network. Right now, the soldiers brought the network up 2 days early, and it operates as with soldiers. On the WinT Increment 2 follow-on test and evaluation, that network has been up pretty solid for the last 3 weeks. We have gotten dramatically smarter only because we built in a rigorous configuration management process so that nothing gets changed. No one can randomly go in and change a parameter or a piece of software without it going through the process. Now, does that happen every once in a while? Oh, you're darn right it does. But we find it, we fix it, and we move on. And the key to that is that if you have the ability to do configuration management, you can also secure the network. So we've gotten also much better at doing the security and the cyber piece on the network. And of course, that's still a work in progress as the threat changes every day on that. But we have gotten from NIE 12.1 to NIE 15.1, we have, as an Army, gotten tremendously smarter on how to work this, how to get it in there, how to get everything installed. Saved a tremendous amount of money from the first time that we used it. That we built the systems out there till now. We have an engineering process now we have in place where we don't go out and build vehicles three or four times. I remember the first NIE, I think there was one vehicle we literally took apart four times because we had to add one thing back in. And when you want to add something in, you better check everything else out in the center of gravity on a vehicle. There's a lot more to that. Yeah, I'm not a big vehicle guy. So putting a radio on one side, I didn't think it was a big problem. Vehicle flips over, that's a bad day. Yeah, so we don't want to do that.
So how about the end results from NIEs? Because the whole point is to build these into, build capability sets out of what you're testing out there, right? So how is that evolved?
So we're still getting better on that. And because I have to get most of the StarNet stuff done. Now, we of course, the first capability set 13 that we brought out, the integration was I would give us a C. I mean, on an A through F, I'd give us a C because we did a lot of great stuff, yet we didn't take time. We didn't really have the time to sit back, do really detailed engineering on the vehicles, and we shoved a lot of stuff in and said, the commander needs all of this stuff. And then we stepped back and we said, what does the commander really, no kidding, need in that vehicle? We don't need this. And I'm about 68 inches tall and I weigh about 165 pounds. I'm not a really big guy, and I shoved so much stuff in that vehicle on that commander's side of the house. Dan Parnell, who was the first brigade commander, about 6'5", I think he was, we had him hunched over while we were driving the vehicle. He couldn't go anywhere if that vehicle stopped. I mean, he was just crammed in there. But it didn't give him – we just didn't do that part. So we're looking at the human engineering. We're looking at what the commander needs to see. I mean literally the visibility there. And how all that fits together into his fight. So initially we had, the commander had all of the kits. So he had all of the things that he needed. He didn't need everything shoved there. He needed his staff with him. So he needed the two sitting behind him going, yes sir, that's what the enemy's course of action is. Or the fire supporter back there saying, yes sir, I can shoot a fire mission on it. We didn't have him there. So we moved displays so that his staff could be with him and gave him the ability to look at whatever he needs to look at. But also allow his staff to execute. Because I don't need the brigade commander sitting right there in the vehicle, being the TC of the vehicle, trying to run the fight, trying to log into a system. That's just not, that's not what we need a brigade commander to do. That guy's trying to execute the fight. So we're learning as we go along here, and a lot of great capability, but if you don't do it in a fashion where you know how the commander's gonna fight, if it's not integrated, if the comms aren't automatically on, then you're not going to get the result you need. And then you'll have the commander out there on a Syngar's radio talking back saying, what staff, tell me what the heck I'm doing. I want to have the commander have the information he needs in front of him when he needs it. And if he needs more, great. Because folks learn differently. each soldier and each commander of a unit is going to sit there and tailor the amount of information they need. We have kids right now that run, I'm shocked, I sit there and some of the intel guys have 17 different chat windows up. Now, I can get to two, I think. But these kids know exactly, young soldiers, know exactly what's going on in each one of those and the parameters there, and they can correlate. And some of the stuff that DSIGS is doing is pretty unique, and they're actually seeing a lot of progress in what they're doing.
So back in the early days, one of the comments back from industry was, you know, this is a neat idea, but it's not clear to us exactly how the Army goes about buying our stuff. How has that progressed in your view? And what's kind of the balance at this point between integrating existing programs of record and bringing in commercial stuff that are good ideas?
So we haven't seen the big no kidding, wow, there's the one thing I want. That's what I was looking for. When I was running the NA, there's that one device that solves this gap and this problem, and I'm going to buy 10,000 of them. We haven't seen that one. We've seen incremental and evolutionary changes. We did have a display device, a CTV, the Commander's Tactical Visualization Device, that was really a neat small company out of Austin that built it. But there's not a real revolutionary piece that came out of it. So one of the things I'd say we have to be better at, obviously, is finding that and bringing that forward. I don't think we've done that, and it's, I don't think it's anybody's fault. It's just that hasn't shown up and been very obvious to us at an NIE.
That's Major General Dan Hughes, the Army's Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, and Communications Tactical. One more segment when we come back, and we'll talk about PEOC-3T's role in mounting the Army's response to the Ebola crisis in West Africa. That's next on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbin. Back on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM, this is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu, talking this hour about the Army's moves to modernize its tactical network. Leading that effort is Major General Dan Hughes. He is the Army's Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, and Communications, Tactical.
In terms of actually deploying the network that you're building on the battlefield, I think one of the first chances that you're getting to do this in a semi-big scale outside of Afghanistan is in West Africa as the Army stands up a response to Ebola. Talk about how PEOC-3T is playing in that.
So AFRICOM called in right away when they started their initial plan and asked for our help. As we do in Afghanistan and Iraq and across the world, PEOC-3T runs the Blue Force tracking that goes on. We run all the SATCOM networks that are there, of course, at the tactical level. So they asked, what could we put in a very quick manner? What could we deploy with the unit that's deploying? Could we set a network up that is extensible? So if we had to add, we could add, so we wouldn't have to recreate the wheel every time. So our team has been working with AFRICOM on a daily basis to make sure they have, that commander gets what he needs to execute the comms that he needs for the support to those folks, those poor folks over there. We also are looking at how we can do Blue Force tracking, because we want to make sure that we have an ID on as many soldiers and as many non-governmental organization folks or NGOs that we can. Because this is going to be a very integrated fight with non-governmental organizations, right, with probably Doctors Without Borders, with the medical community. And what can you do to enhance that? So it's a little different spin on mission command and what that commander. But we're working with the 101st and with AFRICOM to make sure that we give that commander every tool available that's adaptable to what he wants to do. And this is a big area. Folks don't realize how large that part of Africa is. I mean, people don't look at Africa on a regular basis. It's a big geographic area. So a lot of big long-term, long-haul comms that we'll need for that. And, of course, reach back to the community back in the U.S. And, of course, the MedCom guys are going to want to reach back to MedCom and, of course, to the CDC as they go. So we're working that hard.
You mentioned the NGOs and everybody else that you're going to need to work with there. General Bowman talks about this vision where coalition partners can just come one day and plug into the same network that you all are running out in the field. Are you building toward that? Do you have some of that capability?
Absolutely looking. So the issue comes down to what level of security do you need for the information that's there? So what we talk about all the time is how do I get to a data paradigm where I can classify the data itself have it ride on a network, and then when you have the right credentials to pick up that data, you can see the data. So if I can get to that eventually, that unified data that's at cellular level says this is open to anyone, they can see this and build a picture that way. That's I wouldn't say nirvana, but it's pretty close to that on the data side of the house. General Bowman's right on target. We can't take, the enemy gets a vote. So we can't take 6 months to build up somewhere, build a pile of iron, as folks talk about, and then go, okay, it's time to fight. It doesn't work that way. The Ebola piece, I mean, who knew this was coming? It really, you know, there were some indications that, holy cow, this is really a very big problem. But just think about if I could get the 101st can do its mission, the non-governmental organizations can do their mission, and we can have all the data riding in the same stream, and we just pull the data that we need out of the mission command systems, I think that'll be a great win for all of us.
Yeah, sounds good. How close are you? Do you have any of that capability ready to go in Africa?
There's a little bit of it. We're doing a lot of stuff on the unclassified side of the house. But then you get to what's the requirement for the data? How do you classify where a soldier is standing? Is that an unclassified piece or a classified piece? What's the threat? So that we're going to leave that up to the commander to decide that, but we're building that network right now as we're talking here. Our folks are working on what does a commander need to execute, and we're allowing the commander to pick that and building an infrastructure for him.
That's Major General Dan Hughes, the Army's Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, and Communications, Tactical. He talked with us at the annual Association of the U.S. Army Conference here in Washington. Earlier in the hour, we talked about the interplay between the Army's tactical network modernization and what the service is doing to upgrade IT on its garrisons. So for the last few minutes of the show, we'll get a quick update on the garrison front. We're going to hear a quick summary of those efforts from Major General John Morrison, the commander of the Army Network Enterprise Technology Command, or NETCOM. He also spoke at the AUSA conference.
So for the first time, we are building a network from the ground up in coordination with our DISA partners, in coordination with our Air Force partners, and I will tell you that the Navy and the Marine Corps are watching very closely. We've talked about having a joint network for many, many, many years, but essentially what we did is at the upper level we established a joint network, and then everybody sort of plugged into it. So there's three legs of the stool for our network modernization effort. The first one is building a single security architecture. Everybody's heard the term Joint Regional Security Stack. The first one that is operational at Fort Sam Houston, Joint Base San Antonio, right now, with live traffic from both the Air Force and the Army flowing through that stack. That single security architecture is absolutely foundational to establishing what is truly the vision for global joint DODEN operations. The second leg of the stool is really increasing the capacity onto our base post camps and stations. We're doing that through multi-protocol label switching. I don't want to sound like a geek, but it's big pipes. You know, so for the first time, we're bringing pipes onto an installation that outmatch the demand of what our supported commands are looking for. The third component is we've got to modernize the installation infrastructure itself. And that's providing that connectivity, that large pipe that's coming onto the installation, all the way down to the desktop. And so when you bring those three legs of the stool together, what you're now able to do on top of it is put that flat pad so we can sit on it and bake cybersecurity into everything that we're doing. I just make it akin to the single security architecture gives us the ability to start collapsing networks, but those big pipes all the way down to the desktop drive us towards network collapse. Now, we've made tremendous progress. I will tell you that 11 joint regional security stacks will be up and operational probably by the end of calendar year 15 across CONUS, in Europe, in Southwest Asia. We've already done 9 different installations across the Southeast under this new construct, so we are moving very fast. Using Joint Base San Antonio as a model, what was programmed to take us 3 years to modernize, because we have changed the paradigm of which we're acquiring network capabilities, commodity buys, using our own engineering expertise and manpower to move faster from a fielding perspective, we got that knocked down to about 5 months. A significant change in how we've been doing business in the past. But modernization is only going to carry us so far in this time of fiscal limits. What we can do to start helping ourselves is the second major effort that we've got ongoing. That's really to standardize our operational and technical implementations so that we improve network capabilities on the front end and bake cybersecurity in at all echelons. We've got to be honest with ourselves. We've let a lot of stovepipes build inside the Army. And now, by establishing these common standards and driving ourselves towards common implementations, we all start operating and thinking the same. Our first step moving towards that was really to start establishing unity of effort and unity of command from operations and maintenance and defense. So General Cardone directed us back last summer to go ahead and collapse our theater network operation security centers with the old RCERTs. They're now regional cyber centers. Operators, maintainers, and defenders working together on a day-to-day basis under one boss with a very clear C2 line with inside the Army.
Again, that's Major General John Morrison, the Army's commander for the Network Enterprise Technology Command, or NETCOM. Earlier in the hour, we heard from Major General Dan Hughes, the Army's Program Executive Officer for Command, Control, and Communications Tactical, about the Army's roadmap for modernizing its battlefield networks. If you missed any of that conversation, we will post this entire show, as always, at federalnewsradio.com/ondod. Thanks again for joining us this week. Appreciate you tuning in. We'll be back again with another edition of On DoD next week. I'm Jared Serbian. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.